Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, family. Welcome to this Saturday, the second Saturday in June 2020. We are still in the midst of the protests for the loss of Mr. George Floyd, but not only that, it's a bigger issue than that, obviously. It's also protests and demonstrations about fair treatment in our society, in our modern society. I mean, who would have thunk it? That we would be living through a virus as devastating as COVID and changing of life as COVID-19 is, yet alone, who would have thought that in 2020 we would still be so separate and yet unequal? And though that is exactly where we find ourselves, we find ourselves at a crossroads. Especially electric, in my opinion, for this year, because it is an election year, and it is a year in which there are stark differences between, and I mean huge differences between the candidates. Neither of them are perfect. Both of them bring their set of issues and baggage. However, one of them is clearly playing to the fire as it is right now. One of them just last night decided that it was not a good idea to hold a rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma on June 10th. One of them is still moving forward with plans for a rally in Jacksonville. That coincides with one of the largest racial incidents, the axe handle incident, that city has ever seen. The other comes with his baggage. The other, huge proponent for tougher laws on crime, which targeted people of color. Black people, African Americans, Latinos more so than other folks. Also has some women issues with words and or hands, allegedly. Also, was known to rub elbows with those whom thought less of black people and brown people. However, over time, has either come to see the light due for his need of votes, or has come to see the light out of growth, which many of us do. How many of us are the same today as we were 10, 15 years ago? How many of us are the same today as we were when we first stepped out into this world, hell-bent on making change, be it out of college or out of high school or out of military service, if you chose to go to college that route, because I do believe that's college for a lot of people. But to, again, from that point to where we are now, how many of us are the same? How many of us are that closed off from the world that we have not allowed ourselves to live in it and be a part of it and allow it to work itself on us as we worked ourselves on it and molded or it sometimes softens our tone, our rhetoric, and our actions. I know I am not the same person that I was 5 years ago for a number of reasons. I'm not the same person I was 3 years ago, to be honest with you. However, some things that we do and say will live infinitely because of this thing that we call the internet. Some things that we do or say, if it's on videotape, be it digital or analog, it will always be able to be used as a distractor from the change that we've made in ourselves. But, hopefully other people are open to see that change that we've made as we are open to see the change that they've made. And I don't think I can put it out there any more clear than that, to be real. Every election, I think I've said since we've been on air, this is the most important election of our time. And I don't, Rodney and I disagree with this, but I don't agree necessarily with that wholeheartedly. And I say that because, until we change the structure, the presidential election is not the most important election of all time. Getting out to vote and voting in those local elections is, and it remains such. It remains such because the president and the Congress can only do but so much. Once they propose law, once they see the error in their ways, whatever, some things still have to make their ways through the state. And folks, this I still agree with. This I will champion and yell from the mountaintops forever and a day. If you don't vote for folk locally who represent your best interests, nothing will change. Nothing will change. We still have state rights as the republic upon which we stand. The Fed can do a lot, but they can't do it all. The Fed can do a lot, but they can't always carry that baton all the way across the finish line. I think I spoke on it about a month ago on the show. It's like, the way we got new speed limits in America was through the federal government. But it wasn't only it was a law that was passed, but there was no teeth. There was no teeth in the law because the states had to say yay or nay. Well, Clinton was smart. Clinton said, okay, It's cool. Y'all ain't down. It's cool. Not mad at you. 100%. Not mad at you at all. However, funding time, DOT, yeah, partner, we need to move that money someplace else, because we gonna move that to where folks are on board with the changes that I want to make. And if you're not on board, player, then it, you know, just take it personal, because it's not personal at all. He went straight gangster with it. It was a very powerful move. It was the best play that he had. It was the best play that he had. In a lot of ways, it was the only play that he had. I mean, you don't want to fuck with kids' education, so why would you do that? That's not smart. That's not smart at all. However, DOT, it's y'all can make that up, right? I mean, it's your bridge, right? It's your tunnel, right? It's your roads, right? You know, figure that out. Figure that work out. Constitutionally, in your state, you have to balance the budget. You know, I got some change over here for you to get, but if you don't want it, I understand. Work it out. Work it out. And most of them caved in because they were not equipped to handle such a shortfall. And that's how we got the new road speeds. Very, very, very simple play. You know, but again, it leads back to have to up or down, yay or nay. If they are not on board, if they want to act like asses, if they want to protest for whatever their reasons, this is the shit that happens. Potentially nothing, unless you have a leader whom is willing to play real hardball. And this is how we got that. Now, you say, in the grand scheme of things, what the hell does that mean? Well, as I gotten older, again, going back to, I'm not the same person I was 3 or 5 years ago, my driving radius is definitely diminished. You know, in my 20s, it was nothing for me to drive from Texas to back to New York. You know, now I would stop a couple of places. I would stop back in Alabama, get some sleep, wake up, drive to Maryland, usually stop here for an hour or so, and then continue on to New York. Or I might even stay in Maryland a day or and then go to New York. But still, you're talking about a 24 to 26-hour drive easily coming from Texas going to New York. And again, that was something in my youth that I did quite a few times. Quite a few times. Now that my ass is older, yeah, Lee ain't doing that no more. You know, my brother says to me all the time, he says, you know, the older I get, the smaller and smaller my driving radius is. And at this point, it's pretty much 3 hours. Like, if I can't do it in 3 hours by a car, yeah, I'm not even on a plane. I'm not there yet. I still like to drive back and forth to Raleigh. And, of course, I do that because I'm a true dookie. But I still enjoy that very much so. I still enjoy, as you all just saw, or, you know, we talked about on the show, I drove to Ohio. About hours is relatively the same. But I can't do that long, boring shit anymore. Like, I was talking to my man the other day, and he was talking about going from Houston to Dallas. And that's a 3-hour drive. That's an excruciating 3 hours. That shit is boring as hell. It is boring as hell. I would prefer to drive from Vegas back to L.A., which is about a 5-hour drive, than do that. And it's not boring at all. If you've never driven from Vegas to L.A. and you have the time, rent a car and do it, man. It's a beautiful country. And I think I do stuff like that to remind myself of just how beautiful this place is, to really check in and come to peace with the fact that It is such a wonderful country. Now, we got some bad apples in the bunchy. In general, we have a very lovely piece of land in which we all live. Oh God, I'm sorry, y'all. We're talking, and Rodney is breaking some news. He's getting in pretty soon to share it with us, but yeah, he's breaking some news, so he's typing to me while we're talking. So I'm a little distracted. I apologize, but yeah. And I was poor. I grew up broke, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm a project kid. I'm a project kid. I grew up in a fucking project. You know what I'm saying? Like, so as a kid, hearing, well, I was a little different, obviously. Because I'm doing this. So come on now. There's a little difference there. But I was a little different. I was into the world, not just my neighborhood. I was more in tune to, you know, there's more to life than just this. And I always look forward to making it in my life to the point where I can explore more in my life than just this. So reading about or hearing about Iowa and Idaho and Wisconsin and Chicago and so on and so on and so forth, and you know that shit, it put a fire in me. You know, it's like, yo, I want to see these places. I want to go there. Hell, I've gone. You know, I have a personal goal of seeing all 50 states. I have eight left. That's it. And yes, I've already been to Hawaii. I have eight left. That's it. I have a friend. We were in the UK together, and she has a personal goal of seeing every country in the world. And I'm like, yo, go for it. That's too much for me. I just, But you know, man, when that traveling bug bites you and it infects you, that's tough. It's a tough habit to break. It's an expensive habit, but it's a tough habit to break. And it's not as expensive if you do your due diligence, to be honest with you. But the interesting thing, especially as I travel, not only the nation, but the world, as a person of color, is or are the interactions that I have with other people of color. Because we're not just here, we're not just in the West Indies, we're not just in Africa. We're pretty global, you know. You tend to find us everywhere you go. No matter where you go, we there. That's why I keep telling white folks, y'all keep trying to build these rockets and go to space. Y'all gonna find us there too. Y'all just got here. Yeah, we just been chilling. Remember that lost tribe y'all was looking for? We weren't lost. We just rolled out. You know, one day we was just kicking it, chilling, eating some sandwiches. My man Mike came up. My man Mike was like, "Yo, what if we go over there?" And I was like, "Over where? Over there? Yeah, we've been over there. No. I mean, over there." So we built ourselves a little spaceship, and we just rolled out. You know, we've been living here ever since. You know, it's what we do amongst the birds and the trees and the weeds, the apples and the oranges. Just been kicking it because we vegan. You know, we just chilling. Y'all still eating meat? What's wrong with y'all? I'm trying, y'all. I'm trying. I'm trying. I've been getting the shit kicked into me. My teeth can't fit into this week. I started a new job, and I'm liking it, digging it. You know, we're gelling, we're getting together, we're hanging out, we're talking shit to one another, which is always a very good sign, especially when you're the new cat. People feel comfortable joking with you, and you feel comfortable enough to joke with them, and no one's run you up the flagpole as yet. But we're having food brought in, and quite a few times the food was something that I couldn't eat, be it was pork laden or it was one of my non-meat days. And yes, I'm still on that damn kick where a couple of days a week I don't eat meat at all, and other days I do. So I took it really, really hard. And because last week I went really, really hard the other way. I was eating whatever the fuck I wanted to eat, however the hell I wanted to eat. And I was like, ooh, I need to cut back and get my non-meat days in there. So I started, I want to say, last Wednesday, last Thursday. And honestly, I have not had any meat since then. So I said today I would go back to a couple of meat-eating days, and then I would get back to my non-meat-eating days. And the reason I've done it like such is just to mess with my metabolism, to be honest with you. I noticed myself getting a little too pudgy, especially in the gut area, and I wanted to address that. You know, I was doing a lot of walking, but I really had to look at what I was eating and how I was eating it. I switched over to the alkaline water. I did that week before last, I want to say. Yeah, week before last. And it went over so well that I decided to get the pitcher for the house. So I'm using the pitcher as well. But yeah, that was something that I had been introduced to some years ago, the alkaline water, that is. I've been introduced to that a couple of years ago, and I've been challenged to try it, and I was like, yeah, whatever, dog. I throw that shit, this water, motherfucker. Like, what the hell is the difference? But there is a difference. There really is a difference. Like, even when I filtered the tap water, I couldn't drink a lot of it. I don't know why. But the alkaline, I will tear that shit up. Like, there's a little different taste to it. So I don't know if that is it, but I mean, I can really just go for it. And when I drink it, I really feel refreshed versus, you know, again, even the filtered water or the bottled water, you have to drink 3-4 bottles of that crap at a time to feel refreshed. But hell, that alkaline water, I drink a little bit of it, you know, quarter bottle or whatever, and I'm like, oh, I'm good. Go out, do whatever I need to do. But yeah, just trying to stay healthy, man. Trying to stay around with you all as long as I can, and so I can talk as much trash as I can. If this is therapy. I said it from the jump. I'll say it to the end. This is therapy for me. I get to come on here, say whatever I want to say, do whatever I want to do, act a fool, and then leave. That is a beautiful situation. You know how many people would literally harm other people in order to do that? I can't say the word I wanted to say because, you know, Rashi will get on me. By the way, she changed her residence. I am so happy and proud of her. She secured a new dwelling for herself and her family. So I'm supporting her by not being down and out and being like, oh, my God, what am I doing? You know, we were due to have two guests on today. However, scheduling conflicts happened, and it's understandable because they are on the front line for change right now, so it's cool. If either of them come on, though, I will bring them on directly so we can get what they have to give us. But they did inform me that, you know, it looked like they would not be able to make it. That's, you know. Again, we're talking about live radio. We're talking about Saturday morning. Shit happens, without a doubt. Speaking of, I was a little late today. I apologize. Again, starting a new job. Whole schedule's been torn off, ripped off. I'm working nights, too. So that's a challenge. But I put the show together. Everything was ready to go. And I put the wrong damn time in. So at 5-something this morning, there was supposed to be a show. Never happened because 5-something this morning, my ass was still asleep. Put the world on, make sure it happens. It's okay, though. What do I want to say? If you haven't seen the Dave Chappelle special, 8:46, if you haven't seen that, please go to YouTube and check that out. Dave Chappelle decided that he wanted to say something. And he put together a special on his own. I don't know where the hell it was at. Pretty sure, well, it was in Ohio, so it was in his home state. Probably was in his hometown, and whatnot. And because it's his hometown, so every fucking body knows where he lives. So I don't think that's a big secret. You know what I'm saying? It's a very small town in which the cat lives in. That's why I'm saying it might have even been on his property, but whatever. Talks about the incident with Mr. Floyd in a manner that, if you know Dave Chappelle, you weren't shocked nor surprised. But this was one of the best comedy specials I've ever seen that had very little comedy in it, to be honest with you. He spoke more to the American drama than the comedic aspect of our society. And again, the master that he is, and he is a master, to think that cat is a comedic genius, without a doubt. The master that he is in his craft, he was able to keep the audience engaged, keep them laughing, but keep them and himself from not being playing the fool. As you all know, if you've ever listened to the show, if you've been listening to the show for a while, it's usually either come in with a little comic relief here, there, and here. And I've been asked about that on several occasions. I've been warned by some folks that, it takes away from the message. And my stance on that from first day until my last draw of breath is this. We live in a society that sometimes is in that spectrum. We need to remember that it's okay to laugh. It's okay to joke. It's okay to smile. Laughter sometimes is the best medicine. And I need that just like anyone else needs that. So as we get on here and we recall the imagery of a man kneeling on another man's neck, literally, not figuratively, but literally for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. Allow that to sink into your psyche. Allow that to sink into your soul. How do you feel? How do you feel when you think about that? It's depressing. That shit is stressful. I need to laugh to stop crying. I need to laugh to remember that I am still human, to remind myself that I still have a soul. Because if you look at that shit and you think about that shit too much, it will take it away from you. It will. You will become cold. You will become numb. You will become not yourself if you allow it to. And I refuse to allow it to. And one of my escape mechanisms is to insert a little jokey joke here, a little jokey joke there, just a tad bit of relief from the stark reality of how much I'm not appreciated in a mechanism that I sacrificed so much for. Think about this, y'all. former principal of my high school. He wasn't the principal when I was there, but he was the principal of my high school. He used to say this all the time when we were meeting. He would say, fam, y'all remember something. You know, everyone's not going to college, but everyone's going to work. You got to work. You got to work. You know, be it you turn yourself into a self-employed guru, a cosmetologist, a mechanic, a HVC repair person, a engineer or architect, whatever. Or you turn yourself into an activist, a social worker, a nurse, a doctor, a dentist, a firefighter, a police person. Yo, why they say firefighter, but they don't say police persons? That's a good fucking point. Like, you know, firefighter's not, well, you know, a fireman. No, it's a firefighter. It's just police, you know. That's the only option, police. Or you turn yourself into a police. That doesn't even sound right. Like, why is it not police work? I'm sorry. Just thought about that. That's shit that disturbed me. I told you, this is therapy. You know what I'm saying? I don't smoke weed anymore. I stopped smoking weed when I was 15. That was a long ass time ago. You know, these young kids coming on, I need that tree. That's been long gone. I don't drink anymore. I don't. What else am I gonna do? I come on here and I talk to y'all. That's how it works. Get over it. You don't have to listen. I like you to listen, but you don't have to. But anyway. So, any of these things you do, sell real estate, sell insurance, somebody going to work. You're going to work in some form or fashion. If you're not prepared for that, if we are not doing our part as a society, we are not doing our part to prepare you for work in whatever iteration you choose, what do you then become? A problem. In the 60s and 50s, 60s, you know, even a tad bit into the 70s. The older generation would yell at younger folks, get a fucking haircut. You're like a goddamn hippie. But that was the younger folks rebelling against the social norm. Now, social norm, these kids walking around, three-quartered ass showing all the time. Don't get that. I don't understand what that's all about at all, but I'm not supposed to. I'm not young anymore. I'm not young anymore, and it's okay. You know, what's not okay is for you to walk past a person who has potential and not grab them and say, yo, look, you might need to pull your pants up. You might need to look a little different. You might need to talk a little different. I'm not trying to change you. I'm trying to drop some jewels on you that can help you do something else so that you can turn around and help somebody else. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. I'll invest that time and energy into somebody who does. Because at this stage in life, it's about me making little me's. No babies. Not what the fuck I'm talking about. I'm too old for that shit. But I'm talking about putting gems in people's hands that they can look at, read, research, get comfortable with. And then, voila, I might need to do something different. Let me go back to this cat. Let me see what else he has to say so I can teach him something so that they can then turn around and teach somebody else something. Each one, reach one, to teach one. That's it. Simple philosophy. Simple philosophy. Simple managerial style. It's not about me, it's about you. Servant leadership. It's not the fucking end thing. It's been here forever. It's not a new discovery. You know, folks in Columbus, I mean, well, they try to Columbus that shit, but it ain't nothing new. Nothing. There's almost nothing new under the sun. we rebranded, you know, we put some fresh paint on it. But there's almost nothing new under the sun. Doing the right thing has always been, what was the beginning of that? The right fucking thing. Like, dude, it ain't hard. And the right thing is helping people to get to where they need to be. That's it. So as we go through these ever-changing times, as we go through this reckoning of the American spirit, of America's values, the golden rule of doing unto others as you would want done unto yourself is prime. But again, that's nothing new. And black folks are simply in the street saying, we want you to treat us like you treat yourselves. Do unto others as you would want done unto you. No different. We don't want special treatment, but we want to be able to make it home after police stop. We don't want special treatment, but we don't want our teeth kicked in because we asked you while you were stopping us because we were just walking down the street. We don't want special treatment, but we want our babies to be able to go outside and play cops and robbers just like you did when you were younger and come home at the end of the day. Tamir Rice, we don't want special treatment, but we want the amendments guaranteed us, I'm sorry, the rights guaranteed us under the Constitution to bear arms to not end in our death in a car with our baby in the back seat, Philando Castile. We don't want special treatment. Do want to be able to make a living for ourselves and our family. Maybe in the gray area of the law, selling Lucy's. Maybe in the gray area of law, selling CDs. Maybe in the gray area of law, selling movies. To not wind up as a death sentence. How does that shit happen? I wasn't hitting anybody. I wasn't robbing anyone. I wasn't raping anybody. I wasn't creating destruction of property. All I was doing was trying to make a dollar to keep myself and my family in housing, fed, clothed, with electricity, with laundry detergent, with soap, with water. That's it. That's it. We want to be able to drive and mistake a lane. Maybe fail to signal for a lane change. But go home at the end of that day. Alive and well. That's it. Is this too much to ask? Is this too much to ask? That's not special treatment. That's not an extension of yourself. Or is it? Have you, America, been so conditioned to think of we and to treat we so less than that you having to reconcile in your head that you need to treat us just as equal then, is that an extension of you or for you? Is that a reach for you? Can you not get to that point? Is it really too much to ask? You know, I was speaking to Rodney last night, And he told me about premonition, if you want to call it a premonition, that he had. But I wouldn't call it a premonition, Rodney. Rodney, how would you describe it? You said you were listening to the soulful, I won't say sad, soulful gospel music, and all of a sudden, well, I would call it a premonition, wouldn't you? All of a sudden, the thought came into your head that through all of the muckety muck around the world, bullets flying, state secrets in jeopardy, our children could survive all of that. IEDs, bad food, heat, for fire, you name it. Yet returning home to America, they could lose their lives over a traffic stop. Think about that. Think about that, because that actually happened to the brother in Texas. He was an Army veteran. He came home. He got stopped by the cops. He died in custody. He died in custody. I think he served two tours in Iraq. He survived two tours in Iraq to die in fucking Texas in a police station. How does that happen? How does that work? Good morning, Ryan.
It is a morning, brother. Blessings to you and your family as well as your listeners. And my apologies for my tardiness. Literally just as I was dialing into the show, I got a sort of a emergency news breaking message that I needed to attend to.
I like
you
breaking
had
news.
How the well, it's today is the day of the Nevada State GOP convention. And it was made into a virtual convention. The Clark County Party, which is actually bigger than the state party, those delegates that were supposed to be in the state meeting, it's because it's for everyone that's a legitimate GOP member, because it was a virtual meeting. And I just got this basically straight from a horse's mouth. Because it was a virtual meeting, right as the virtual meeting started, it's reported that all of the Clark County non-DJT delegates, and for those who don't know, that's the initials to the full name of the guy acting as president at 1600 Black Lives Matter Place, otherwise known as the White House.
Okay, gotcha.
So if you were not a pledged delegate for him, they were kicked out of the Nevada convention so that it only included pledged DJT delegates. That's right. So there has been a full DJT takeover of the Nevada State Party, which is mostly comprised of Clark County, which is the largest populated county in Nevada, which is where Las Vegas is, Henderson, North Las Vegas. Those members were all kicked out, and that just left DJT delegates as they're proceeding with their convention. One of the things that's most disturbing about this is the recent, last weekend was the Clark County Republican Party convention. And at that convention, one of our Las Vegas City Council women, who is also Mayor Pro Tem, is alleged to have made a statement, and I'll give it to you, quote unquote, as a white woman, if I lose a job to their black asses, And I'll just end the quote there. And there was more to it. And she has she was asked to apologize. She resisted.
Did she?
As the pressure built. Well, as the, initially she did not. She did not. Then we have one black city council person that's on the Las Vegas City Council. He issued a press release, a letter, asking, stating what happened, the allegations, and asking the mayor, which is Carolyn Goodman. Many of you may have known, may remember her from being on Anderson Cooper, suggesting that Nevada would be the first city to open up and its people could be used as test subjects as to the spread of coronavirus if the city fully opened. She is the mayor that appointed this Las Vegas City Councilwoman Michelle Fiore as mayor pro tem. So in other words, she's like the vice mayor. If something happened to the mayor, she would take over that position. And the Las Vegas City Council person that's black is named Cedric Creer. He's new at the job. And he did issue a press release asking the mayor to strip the city councilwoman of her mayor pro tem title. Thus far, that has not happened. And to the best of my knowledge, no one else on the Las Vegas City Council has a problem with the racially insensitive remarks that this city councilwoman is alleged to have made. There have been members of the Clark County Republican Party that came out against this city councilwoman demanding an apology. Since then, she did call a press conference after the black city councilman released his letter at her home, where initially she doubled down on her stance and said that that's just the way she, I'm paraphrasing now, that's just the way she talks from, she's from Brooklyn, that's just the way she talks. And if she said ASS instead of something else that may have offended people, you know, she's sorry for offending them, but that's just the way she talks.
I'm sorry. I have a question. Aren't you from Brooklyn?
Go ahead.
Aren't you from Brooklyn?
Bedside, do or die, brother. Yes, sir.
You talk like that?
No, sir.
Oh, okay. I was just asking because, you know, I mean, if it was something in the water, then maybe we needed to be aware of that, you know, if we ever go to Bedside, you know, partake in the eating habits of the locals, but since it wasn't or isn't, then, you know, I'm sorry. I apologize for slowing you down a little bit. I was just asking. I was curious.
No, and here's the thing. To bring racial, to bring your place of birth into a statement about a racially insensitive remark, where you're born does not make you racially insensitive. You make yourself racially insensitive no matter where you are, because obviously she is not in Brooklyn right now. She is in Las Vegas, Nevada. The remark was made in Winnemucca, Nevada. And the interesting thing about that, since they're the Clark County Republican Party, is why was the convention held in Winnemucca? Find out that a white supremacist organization is based in Winnemucca, which with members reportedly at the convention, that it is alleged that she has some type of ties to. One of those ties is that at the Open Nevada protest rallies, white supremacist organizations called the Proud Boys, the American Guard, as well as others, were in attendance and were supporting and supported by the Nevada GOP. And that's extremely troubling. Actually, there
What's
was
going on out there?
the Boogaloo Boys were also a part of the Open Rallies, and as you know, they were just arrested, what, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, for...
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Right, for actively working on
planning
blowing
the,
up transformers and interfering and interrupting in the local protests here. And to top this off, Lee, there's a radio personality here who was organizing a Blue Lives Matter sort of counter protest in support of the police for the to happen tomorrow on the Las Vegas Strip.
Tone deaf. Tone deaf. You know, when the orange one, I respect you, so I won't say his name. The orange one put out the announcement that he was going to have a rally on Juneteenth in Tulsa. Just tone deaf. But he's continuing with, I spoke on this earlier in the show, so if you all are hearing it again, you know, it's okay. It's good information. He's continuing with the rally in Jacksonville, which will coincide with the axe handle incident in Jacksonville. Tonda, like, who in the hell are your advisors? Who in the hell are your managers? Look, I don't want you to win. I don't. Not gonna lie. But come on, fam. Like, you gonna just kick that much dirt up on your way out just because? Seriously, just because? Like, no restraint, no dignity. I think about this, and I remember John McCain, God rest his soul. When John McCain realized that he was losing and he was going to lose, he stood firm and pivoted to, you know, I want us, his constituents, to make our bones known. I want us to be heard. I want us to have a place at the table. But we will not. We will not disrespect the office of the presidency of the United States. So I will not allow you all to go but so far when I'm in your presence. If you remember clearly, he was having a rally, and this white woman jumped up, and she started claiming that President Obama was a Muslim and a terrorist. And he said, oh, no, 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 no. I know Barack, he's a good man, and he will do the best that he can for our country, but we're not going to do that. And, you know, just no class, dog. This dude has no class whatsoever. And I finally figured out who he sounds like. And I was, because it was bothering me for a while. Seriously, I was like, he sounds like Commandant Lassard from the police academy. You know, because everything is very, very, it's very, very good. It's very, very, if you remember the police academy movies, just Google Commandant Lassard, to be honest with you. And if you do that, you get some audio, close your eyes. Sounds just like 45. And it's sad that this country is being led by such a clown. But this is what the people wanted, and this is what the people got. I say this is what the people wanted because those of us who sat home cast a vote for him. I say this is what the people wanted because the people that wanted him came out no matter what, and they came out in droves no matter what. And this is what we got. You know, so this is where we are. And hopefully there'll come a different result here in November. But until then, we got to play with the cards that we were dealt. Now, Rodney, but my question is still on the table. Man, what the hell going on over there? Seriously, what's going on?
Lee, what's going on here actually is just a more overt version of what's going on in multiple states across the country. And that is, you said, well, this is a takeover, a full takeover of the Republican Party by DJT. Now, many people would say he had taken it over before, and I would say I could go along with that. Then I would modify my statement and say not only is this the full takeover, the trans takeover of the GOP by DJT, but this is also the transition of what was the GOP, which was the grand old party, Republican Party. It is no longer that party. So, you know, like in the 60s, when Democrats and Republicans kind of flipped the script on us? This time, the two parties are not flipping the script on ideology. We have one party that is flipping its script from its ideology to a white supremacist, a full white supremacist ideology. And people say that DJT is a clown. You said it, and maybe so. But I think that we underestimate his intellect to manipulating people to his will. And that going to Tulsa and saying that it was a celebration was not a misspeak on his part. It was not a dog whistle, as some people say. No, it was a purposeful clarion call to white supremacists of America that he is now the grand wizard of all white supremacist organizations, and to come to the place where white supremacists not only destroyed one of the wealthiest, if not the wealthiest, black town in its day, looted and took all the possessions, including brothers' Masonic rings, killed veterans that they served with, wearing uniform, rendering a salute. This is all documented. Not only did they do that, but not one person has ever served a day in jail for killing and pillaging hundreds of people's property and people in Tulsa, Oklahoma, otherwise known as the Greenwood District, which was the black district. That was what that, and if you look at the places where he's having his rallies, if you hear, listen to his language, liberate Michigan, liberate Wisconsin, liberate Pennsylvania, who showed up? It's the same groups of people that showed up in Nevada to liberate Nevada. They went to the governor's mansion. They went to the Capitol with rifles or semi-automatic rifles, with body armor. You had multiple white supremacist organizations representing. There's pictures of them. The three fellas that I mentioned earlier that got arrested, they were in attendance. This is a clarion call. For those who are history buffs, look up Kristallnacht, The American translation would be Crystal Night. And that was the consolidation of the brown shirts for the Nazis. That was, this is what is going on. And if the people do not rise up and reclaim America, this is resistance summer right here. If we do not claim up and reclaim what America is supposed to be, it never was, but I will say that it was aspirational. That aspiration is being lined through, and this is the building, and yes, you can quote me, this is the building of the Fourth Reich. Nazis have come to America in the form and being led by DJT.
That was heavy, bro. That was heavy. But not to be joked with. I mean, we are clearly seeing a rift in our social norms, which is played out because every day we talk about the changes or disregards for our social norms. But when these charges or changes are coming or perceived, either way, right, perceived or actual, coming from the head of our state, POTUS, that is a problem. That is a huge problem. The issue remains, or I'm sorry, the question remains, not the issue. The question remains, when he loses, what is he going to do? Is he drumming up all these folks now, the brown shirts, the Boogaloo Boys, and all the others now to behave as his pseudo-army, to take on the actual army? Why is there a gate around the White House? Has there ever been a gate around the White House? There have been barriers around the White House after 9/11, and that was understandable. But has there ever been a gate actually erected around the White House? I don't recall that. Never recall that. No matter how pissed off America and Americans were at the policies of Ford, Reagan, Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, Obama, never has there been a fence erected around the White House. Why is there now? Why is the White House looking like more and more like a compound? I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't feel comfortable with that at all, especially when Barr, like, constantly turned a blind eye to the lawlessness of 45, be it his detainee orders, be it his immigration policies, be it not shielding folks from testimony before Congress, doesn't matter. What is going to happen when this cat loses? Is he going to set the building ablaze, quite fucking literally, and say, fuck it, you can have it. It's all in ashes. You want it, you can have it. It's all in ashes. You figure it out. Or is he just going to do it figuratively, which he, in effect, is doing right now. He's setting the building ablaze figuratively right now. We are going to be so fucked up as a nation for years to come that it's going to take some charismatic leadership to get us back even close to center. Go ahead, Ronnie. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Lee. I think that when you ask the question of what is he going to do, one of the things that the POTUS is a bad poker player. Now, well, let me take that back. I don't know if he's a bad poker player or whether he is a poker player that purposely sends his tails he has everything he has done, he has told us in advance that he was going to do it. If he was called on it, if he was called on it, he would say, oh, well, it was a joke. You know, it wasn't, you all just took it out of context. And then it kind of dies down. And then he does it. Everything. And so somebody, as a news reporter, she says, do not pay attention so much to what he says. Just follow what he does. And whatever he does, he has already told us that he's going to do it. So pay attention to the trend of his action. And so if we just said we didn't hear him say this or that, and you were writing down on the board what he has done, he has systematically sort of taken over our institutions. He has depowered institutions. A case in point would be the Attorney General, used to be called the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the Nation, in charge of the Department of Justice and the FBI. Well, DJT declared himself to be the Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the Nation. Words do matter, but we blow his words off as jest. And when I say don't pay attention to his words, no, pay attention to what he says he's going to do and pay attention to all of the crazy things, because those are the things that we say that will never happen. He's not going to do that. He's not serious.
Right.
But he does them. He does them. And that is so critically important to us figuring him out. And get rid of the label that he's dumb, that he's stupid. First of all, the man is president of the United States of America. That's first. That happened. Even if it was a bunch of circumstances, he was smart enough to put himself in the position to be the benefactor of those circumstances. Right?
Right.
He has been impeached. He has been impeached in his first term in office, and he has enough control of the Republican Party that he got the senators of that party to accept his malfeasance while in office with what some people say has sold America to the Russians. That's happened. Man, I could just go down the list of things that he has done.
I don't want you to have a stroke.
Hey.
Seriously, I mean, when you sit back and think about it, it's frustrating as hell. It's frustrating as hell. Because, you know, you, even more so than I, have paid a price for this country. You know what I'm saying? But we are in a family of folks who, even to this day, have a strong connection to that price tag. The receipt might not be as long as others, you know, but we all got receipts. We all got receipts. And I think about my sister. Because this is her final year, you know. Now she'll retire officially next year. So God willing, the creek don't rise. Her DD-214 will be signed by somebody. Her final orders will be signed by somebody else. But if that's not the case, after 30 years of service to our nation, that's how she goes out. This is who she goes out with. Yeah, I just think that's some bullshit, to be real. You know, now you don't get to pick and choose who you go out with. You don't get to pick and choose the commander in chief. No, you do not. The focus needs to be on the UCMJ and taking care of the folks that work for you, your soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and the like. But still, who wants to go out like that? You know, who wants to go out with an asshole in the position to give them their walking papers, especially when they've dedicated so much of their lives to the defense and the protection of our country? So yeah man, no, don't do it, because it's too much. You know, to borrow a phrase from DL, it's just too much. Once you if you allow yourself to actually sit back and think about it, it is too much. It's depressing. It's depressing as hell. And
well, Lee, what I did,
it just keeps getting worse.
Go ahead, bud.
Go ahead. No, it keeps getting worse. Go ahead.
When I had that moment the other day, the first question you asked me, to top it off, I have a son who serves in the United States military. I did not push him in. As a matter of fact, I didn't try to keep him out, but I definitely shared college, you know, go to college, do something. Well, he did go to college, and then he joined the military. So he did what I asked him to do, but he wound up joining the military anyway. He's already been deployed into a combat theater. He's already been activated on a QRF, right? He's already done those things. He was put on standby when this COVID-19 kicked off, because he's one of the few people in the military, in the United States Air Force, that's Ebola certified, and they thought that this was something similar to Ebola in its infection rate, and then it turned out to be something even worse, and he was scheduled to deploy again. But the point is that when my son was deployed, and my son's a grown man, he and I are about the same height, but he got broad shoulders, brother's thick, you know, he's like a big, you know, he's like a muscle walking around. And
that's because he's young.
Got deployed. Yeah, exactly. We were like that, right?
Deployed. All like that when we were young.
I didn't worry.
Shit, I look at pictures of me when
exactly.
I first came out. I was like, wow, I was cut.
Yeah,
I was cut
like
hell. Good Lord.
Sharp, full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had. Hey, you didn't have a one pack. You had a six pack. You know.
That's it.
And
I had dreams and
know,
hopes.
And hey, but Lee. He has done what we say a child should do. He graduated high school. He didn't get in any trouble. He didn't get anybody pregnant, so there's not some miscellaneous chilling running around out there. He worked part of his way through. Actually, I think he worked the whole time he was in college, and never got in any trouble. Never used any illegal substances. None of that stuff, right? And then decided to join the United States military, was deployed. But as I was in my thought room, which is really my shower, with that gospel music playing, I thought, man, even when my son was deployed, I did not fear for his life nowhere near how I feared for his life once he came home to visit me. And the fear wasn't from somebody, a sniper like my homie here, who's a Marine, who got shot in the arm, Ruben De Silva. That wasn't my fear of him when he was deployed. But my fear was him coming home to visit me, and some police officer from any police department USA stopping him because he is black. And what really set it off was just before I got into my thought room, a friend from Michigan had sent me a news report from, I think it was the Detroit Daily Press. I'm not sure about that, but I think that's where it was from. And it was about a 15-year-old boy, not a man, 15-year-old boy, working, you know, doing what we say we want our children to do, gain some work experience as teenagers, right? Working and was off work, waiting outside for his dad to pick him up. I picked my son up from work before. But before the father got there, as the boy is waiting outside, This is in Detroit. The boy is waiting outside. A police officer comes up and starts questioning him, asks him for his ID. The boy gives him his name. The police officer commences to put cuffs on him. The boy is asking what for. The father drives up. The father drives up to where he's supposed to be picking up his son. And he's driving up to where he's supposed to be picking up his son. He sees a bunch of police cars where he's supposed to be picking up his son. And then, you know, imagine the trepidation. Imagine the thoughts that you would have, Lee, if you were going to where you knew your son was, because your son does exactly what you tell him to do every time. You knew where he was supposed to, where he was supposed to be. And as you're approaching him, you see a bunch of police cars around him. What thought is, and this is rhetorical, what thought is going through your mind? And whatever thought, whatever feeling that you got in the pit of your stomach, no matter how much your heart started racing, and no matter how many prayers or whatever you were doing, that you're hoping it's not your son, then you see that it actually is your son, and a bunch of police officers are on him. And this happened, remember, shortly after the situation with Brother George Floyd. Now, luckily, so don't want to keep y'all in suspense, luckily, the boy survived. But when I was in my thought room, what happened to me was the emotion of the music, all of this stuff that's been going on, and then what I did was I imagined myself as that father, and I was driving up to the grocery store where my son used to work, and he's waiting where I always picked him up, and I see a bunch of police cars and police struggling with somebody where in the same location I always pick up my son, and in the horror, because I'm praying it's not him, and then I see that it's him. That was what prompted me to make the post that I did the other day, because I don't know if I felt what that father felt, and I'm sure I didn't feel what George Floyd's Perry's family felt, but I felt something close enough to it that it's a feeling I know I would never want to have.
Did you repeat what you said, though? You said, luckily, the child survived. Luckily.
That's right.
The child
That's
survived.
Right.
We got to get away from that. We got to get away from us bringing forth luck to be able to live through encounters with police. You know, a friend of mine asked, she says, why would a friend of mine sent me a video of this guy, black guy, being arrested by the police, and he just kept asking the officer, you know, why are you trying to arrest me? And he was kind of pulling away. And so why would he do that? Why wouldn't he just, you know, allow the cop to arrest him and go through the process, and then they figure out that he wasn't the actual guy, you know, boom, boom, boom. So, well, what do you mean? Just like, well, why would he resist? I don't know the circumstances of why he would resist, but is it resisting if you've done nothing wrong? Like, you know, now she is Nigerian, and she was raised in the UK. And I was like, well, you know, think about it. You know, Americans are different. We were born from dispute. We were born from rebellion. This country was fathered in the belly of rebellion. We kicked the British out. We prevented the French from running in. We took over the native indigenous folks' land. It's all been about a damn rebellion. The Mexicans, we kicked their asses out of California, Nevada, New Mexico, Little Mexico, which is Texas. You know, we kicked their asses out. That's just the nature of us. But it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if he did nothing wrong, then just, you know, let the cop do what he's going to do and let them do their investigation and then you're home free. You know, he's putting himself in a situation where he may lose his life. Like, well, I don't think many people think about it like that, to be honest with you. In the moment, they don't want to put themselves in a situation where they may lose their life by going to jail. But that's America. It's a toss-up. It truly is a toss-up. Am I going to live? Am I not going to live? Why should you have to think about that question? Why should you have to come up with an answer to that question, I should say, actually? You shouldn't. You should not have to come up to an answer to that fucking question just because a cop comes around. Why do you get nervous when a cop pulls beside you? You do nothing. You've done nothing wrong. You have insurance. The car is yours. You haven't stolen from anybody. You have no outstanding warrants for anything. But why do you get nervous? It's if you're black or brown in America, I can't speak for everybody. I will speak for most. For most of us, there is a heightened sense of awareness and self-preservation whenever law enforcement is near. Would you agree with that, Rodney? Or is that why you move all the way up
for sure. No, for sure. It is it is a fact. Look, if you a slave, right, and you're back in the 1600s and the slave catcher patrol stops you, how are you going to feel? What thoughts are going through your mind? You've seen what they do to people that they capture, right? We see what they did to George Floyd. We saw it.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost, not quite live, but almost live. We watched his life leave his body after calling for his mother. We watched that. So, there's a long list.
Mother.
That's right. He called for his mother. And
his
not
dead mother.
Even after.
I need to make that clear.
Another cop. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I need to make that clear. He called for his dead mother. His mother was dead.
That's right.
Go ahead, bro. I'm sorry.
We watched that. Now, something else that we watched is not only did we watch that, we watched another police officer, I believe it was, check his pulse, and I think I could even hear him say that he had no pulse, could not find a pulse. They still did nothing. The guy still sat on him. They still sat on him. They still restrained him until life, after there was no pulse, which is a sign of life, they still showed no empathy for that. And they still sat on him as if to say, we're making sure we're squeezing every drop. They did not render any aid, right, which they're supposed to render aid.
You good
but
man.
The visual, the brother was 6'6". They took the brother down like a bunch of cowboys cutting a cow or a bull away from the rest of the herd as they all go after that one and take it down. That's what they did to this brother, and that's what we saw. We got to see one of our big brothers. Now, if he would have fought back, he could have fought back, but he did not. He complied. So to all of those people out there say, all those violent white black people, they had just listened. They would just comply. This brother did comply, and there's a list of brothers as well as sisters who have complied, and ultimately they wound up dead. But we saw that visual, not a woman, though her life is not less any more than a brother. It's a fact that they went after one of our warriors, and they took him down in public. That's what I'm talking about. People say symbols are not important. Oh, you full of bovine defecation. You just don't know your history. That's why it's important that those Confederate statues come down. That's why it's important that Mississippi changes its flag. Any symbol of our oppression should never be displayed in public by a governmental body. And they took our, they took one of our big brothers down, and that's what we get to see. So that was horrible. We cannot allow that to happen anymore. Protesting is good. You know, I've never had a problem with protesting. But in addition to protesting, you have to have some type of active plan to create not temporary change, not feel-good change, but systemic change. That's what you have to have in place. And that's what we need to build all across America in black communities. And I'm talking specifically black communities. That white man that was 75 years old that was pushed down on in the protest back east, that now DJT is saying, well, he fell harder than he was pushed, and he was really part of anti-fascia, right? As the man is still in ICU, because I've said it on this show, I've said it on my show, and I've said it publicly when I was running for office, black people have been America's canary in the coal mine. We tell white people in advance what's going to happen to the least of them after it's happened to us. And what we're seeing today is such a lack of empathy for us that it has created a lack of empathy for human life that's different from theirs as a whole. And now it's being enacted on them. One of the reasons why we're gaining more white allies, Lee, and it's unfortunate, but it is reality. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But one of the reasons why we're gaining more white allies, besides the fact that it's just the right thing, is because now it's starting to happen to them. And they don't like being treated like black people. This is how we've been treated ever since we've been here. And now our white liberals, and even just like this morning that happened to the Republican, they're being treated like black people, and they don't like it.
Man, look, when it's different when the rabbit has the gun. You know what I'm saying? It's a totally different feeling when a rabbit has the gun. You know what I'm saying? But look, Roddy, give me a second. I'm allowing Brother Chris to join the show. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm well. What's your comment, sir?
I'm just thinking about, you know, like when they say when they said Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't they talking about the people that you know, these people that were killed? You know, we're talking about those people. So if somebody's specifically talking about these people, and then someone says, "Well, all lives matter," you know, now you're see, there you go, you just missed it. There's little thing you just missed it. So there's a lot of confusion in that little tiny bit, and it's like people are blowing it out of proportion.
That's deflection. That's a deflective mechanism used to try to change and alter the narrative to something more flattering to the people who are being oppressive, not the oppressed.
Yeah, man, you nailing it, bro. You put it down today. I'm just listening. I'm just like, okay, you know, because you're straight. You know what I mean? And What am I gonna do? Well, I can only add to what you're saying that would just make what you're saying all the more brighter. And I guarantee that brightness is definitely gonna cause people to back up because, oh, it's just too bright, you know, they can't get down with that. But they go back where they came from, and then what love is doing is drawing them out of that stuff back into the light gradually so they can adjust. And this is all we're doing. Seeing the adjustments taking place, you know.
Well, we're dang sure trying, and we're trying to do our part to make such happen. And we thank you for your comment and joining the show.
Yeah. I love what you're saying, man. I'm just like, man, I woke up, I didn't know I was going to get all this, but, you know, keep on doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, thank you. Well, again, thank you, and again, we appreciate the time and we appreciate the comment, Rodney. We're gonna wrap it up, bro, because unfortunately, I gotta get back out here to the plantation. But I wanted you to get in and share your breaking news with the folks and with the family. Again, family, for those listening live or those who listen later, we appreciate your time. Chris, we appreciate you getting up extra early out there on the West Coast to join in with us. Y'all be safe out here, man. Seriously, coronavirus is after us. We're still living through this huge racial divide here in America. That's still after us. But we're stronger and better than that. We're stronger and better than that. I believe that to my core. I believe that. That's why I raised my hand and decided to protect this country against enemies, both foreign and domestic. I would do it again in a heartbeat, especially if I was about, 15, 20 years young. Because right now, man, my back and my knees, man, I'm telling you, there's problems going on right now. However, I would do it in a heartbeat, and it was the best time of my life. And I appreciate all those whom have touched it and touched me in that way, and those whom I've been able to turn around and touch because of those whom came into my life. Rodney, please keep me informed of what's going on out there in Vegas, man. I'm definitely in tune to that and trying to keep up with you. I know you're a busy young man, but I appreciate the time as always, sir. Family, we love you.
Brother.
We love you. We appreciate you. Be good. Be safe. Until next week. Peace.
Peace.